Life is hard. It isn't easy. I think we all know that, but I think we may forget it, or maybe even feel ashamed to admit it in such a grand setting as this. Let me ask you a question. Why do you come to church? We come to worship. We come to learn about our faith. We come to grow. We come to get advice on how to act, how to follow Christ, how to be a disciple, how to be a good person of faith, right? We come to engage in the work of Christ, to do mission work, doing good. But sometimes, just from what I've heard and observed and felt, sometimes I'm worried that when we do come to church, we may become thinking that church is the place for outstanding, upstanding role models of faith, and maybe not the place for real people. So we come to church, and hopefully we get all we need for the week, because we leave here and we go home and live, and life, well, life is hard. Teach a Sunday school class here at church. In it, we probably have about 15 families, and now we have a dog. We're varied in ages and experience. And what I tell them all the time in our Sunday school class is we're going to be real people. I don't want anyone in our class who's putting on airs, who's faking it until they're making it. I don't want anyone afraid to share what they really think. I don't want anyone afraid to share what they really feel. I also don't want all the school teachers in the class always correcting my grammar, but we can't always get what we want. If we're going to be anything, we're going to be real. Or maybe a lot of other things too. Irreverent. Late. Underdressed. I had on shorts and a sweater. My mom saw me this morning and said, "Go home and change." Borderline heretical even. But above all else, we're going to be real. And I can tell you what I've learned from these real people. Life is hard.
So there I was 29 years old. I'm married to the love of my life. I had a newborn baby. A newborn baby boy who was more beautiful and pure than anything I had ever seen in my life. I owned a beautiful home. I had a fantastic career. I was blessed beyond measure. And yet at the same time, I had the inability to shake the feeling that something was very, very wrong. People close to me had made it clear something was wrong. The tired look that I always had on my face. The stress that seemed to just follow me from room to room. The lack of smiles and conversation that I had been known for just a year ago, they were all gone. And as a testament to the male species, I ignored all of this. And I simply blamed it on all the stressors that we face every day as individuals. It wasn't until I couldn't keep food on my stomach that I realized, you know what? I fear something is really, really wrong. So going into the doctor expecting heartburn and receiving a request for an x-ray is unexpected. Getting the call later that day that while the x-ray was good, a CT scan was really needed, that's unnerving. Realizing and receiving a call the next day that they'd already scheduled a PET scan for me, it's downright terrifying. So I already knew what was going to be said when I saw that number on my phone and it rang and I answered. It was just the way that it was presented that I was really astonished. They said, "Don't worry, it's a very treatable cancer." And so that was an interesting way to learn, but nonetheless, I was glad to know. As the shock wore off, it was replaced by unbelievable fear and a tremendous amount of questions. Would I be able to continue to work my fantastic job? Could I pay for my beautiful home? And most importantly, would I be able to take care of my son and keep the promise of growing old with my wife? And just like that, with one phone call, the greatest hardship I had ever experienced as an individual, and certainly the greatest hardship to my family, suddenly presented itself.
Life is hard. And so we come to Sunday school, even though some days it's hard as heck to get there. Some of us have more kids than others, I'm told. So it's a challenge. Some days we don't even get to the lesson because we're all sitting around telling our stories of what we have going on, what we're dealing with, what we're facing, real stories. Real people. And we listen to one another. And we complain to one another. And we love on one another. And we encourage one another because we need it. Because life, well, life is hard. And we don't get to the lesson because we're too busy with one another. But maybe that is the lesson. Maybe we need to be there for one another just as we are, as screwed up and human and as messed up as we are. And in that realness, in that moment, we nurture real faith. Faith that's life tested. This probably won't come as a surprise, but I cannot stand feeling like I can't be myself. It makes me want to come out of my skin. Especially when it comes to expressing my faith and talking about discipleship. That's one of the things I love about my job at Cancer Services. I'm free to be myself. I haven't always had that freedom. That was one of the hardest things about church work to me. Believe it or not, congregations project a lot of their opinions onto their minister. And I didn't always check off all the boxes you had to check off in some people's minds in order to be a minister. For some people, it was a problem. So I found another way to serve my calling. A way where I'm called just as I am. And I tell people all the time, what I do at Cancer Services, because they'll hear me preach and they'll say, "Oh, you need to get back in the pulpit." I'm like, no, what I do at Cancer Services, it's all the ministry of the church with none of the mess. We haven't had a board meeting last over an hour in the 5 years I've been there. I mean, we're either helping cancer patients or we're not. Simple. So I can be myself, and it's great. And then when I come to church, I'm allowed to be me because I'm just a church member. I'm not a staff member. Y'all can't fire me. And let me tell you what I've learned in these 5 years. My faith has grown deeper and become more real as I've been allowed to learn about it and explore it being myself. It's a real faith. I know at times me being myself might make some people uncomfortable. I know my mama hates it when I'm vulgar, for instance. Sometimes my emotions get the better of me when I'm teaching, and the open door class will have to close their Sunday school class door. I think Hal told me earlier, hey, we get to hear half your lesson and half our lesson. Maybe mama has a point. Maybe the class has a point in closing the door. But I'm also performing a role intentionally. I'm sneaky like that. You see, I think the church should be the place where we can be the most real, the most vulnerable, the most ourselves. And I think that as we're given freedom to do that, we can grow closer to God in a real and deep way. But I'm afraid that always isn't the case. I'm afraid we deal with the pressure of wanting to appear like we have it together, of wanting to appear normal, of wanting to appear strong. We come to church and it's almost like Facebook, where we only see snippets of that perfect family life. We want to appear like the good middle class Christians, American Christians that we are. So maybe we come to church and maybe it isn't the place where we can be the most real and the most vulnerable and the most ourselves. And that's a shame. Because life is hard.
I didn't forgive my husband for what he did or didn't do, what he did or didn't say before he was diagnosed with cancer, but while he was very much sick. Further admission, I didn't forgive myself either. Let me take a step back. It was the middle of March, much like now. I was 6 months pregnant, and our Christmas tree still stood tall in the formal living room in the middle of March. Angry as all get out, knowing I had asked my husband to take it down at least 20 times, my huge pregnant belly and I decided to take matters into our own hands. I reached up and I pulled that Christmas evergreen down by the top until it loudly crashed to the hardwood floors. I proceeded to drag it, metal bass screeching across our hardwoods, out the back door. I swung open the back door and tossed the whole thing, lights, decorations, base, and all, down into our backyard, calling my husband every name in the book on the way. This was probably one of the lowest points in our otherwise beautifully perfect marriage. I was mostly confused. Why is my husband so overwhelmingly tired all the time? Why can't he seem to focus? Why does he seem so anxious? Our first son was born in mid-June, and my husband's tiredness and stress levels continued to progress. My thoughts, I'm the one that just gave birth. Why are you so tired? And possibly the most heartbreaking to this day, why aren't you being the dad I always thought you would be? It was most likely around 2 a.m. one night when these thoughts were verbalized. I spoke words I didn't mean. He spoke words he didn't mean. Our once blissful marriage and friendship was broken, and we didn't understand why. We pushed through the motions of raising a new baby, working, making dinner, getting showers, paying bills, and then we admitted something was very wrong. Beginning in November, my husband endured a series of medical tests, x-rays, CT scans, PET scans, CT biopsies, and there it was, the call that changed it all. At the age of 29, my husband was diagnosed with cancer, specifically Hodgkin's lymphoma. My faith wasn't subtly tested. It was rocked by a Category 5 hurricane. We suppressed previous arguments and emotions in an effort to survive emotionally, physically, spiritually, mentally. For the next 5 months, it didn't matter what we felt before the diagnosis, the conversations we needed to have, the answers that now seem to make everything so clear. I wasn't angry with my husband. I was angry at how cancer had affected my husband even before we knew he was sick. The regret now is that the anger I had suppressed reemerged once he was all clear, cancer-free. There's that saying that spoken words are like dispensed toothpaste. It's awful hard to get it back in the tube. I remember the anger I experienced of feeling incredibly alone and lonely as a new mom. I remembered the heartbreak I felt from those words spoken during those 2 a.m. fights. After all, when Josh was diagnosed, we had a six-month-old. And I've learned over the past years, I'm not a great forgiver. The art of forgiveness is a skill, an act of grace I work on daily. We had to revisit many of those painful moments after the battle of cancer and chemo in order to move forward. By God's grace, we have grown in ways as husband and wife that will undoubtedly bond us for life, and now spend most of our days in bountiful happiness. Forgiving yourself and your loved one is life-altering, immensely, incredibly life-changing for the good. I had asked God to forgive me for my anger, my doubt, my fear. He has forgiven me for those things. I only needed to accept the forgiveness I had received.
Life is hard. It's this mix of sin and grace, mistakes and forgiveness, struggles and victories, peaks and valleys, guilt and love. It's a bit of everything. But for sure, it's better experienced in community. Authentic, real community, which is what the church is supposed to be. The writer of Hebrews knew this. John read it in the 10th chapter, verses 23 through 25, if you're looking in your Bibles, but I'm going to read it again. Let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. And all the more as you see the day approaching. In other words, the day being the coming of the kingdom. So as things get tougher, be sure to do this even more. Can we come and meet together with all of our faults and all of our failures and all of our beautiful parts and all of our successes and all of our ugly parts? Can we meet together as we are, all of us, and provoke one another, not to anger, no, but to love and to good deeds, encouraging one another, being there for one another, loving one another, and being authentic to who we are, real stories, real people, real faith, not neglecting to come in together, but coming together because we need one another, and we need one another and God's grace and helping one another to nurture that real faith because, well, life is hard.
So we fast forward 8 months, and I'm completely bald. I'm exhausted mentally. I'm exhausted physically. I gained 30 pounds, which means I didn't even get the one side effect of cancer that I wanted. So, never good. So, I was battered, but by God's grace, I was still far from beaten. After my oncology appointment that day, I lingered on the words, cancer-free. Cancer-free. The words took on more meaning than I could have ever imagined. I was suddenly free from the fear of not getting to hug my little boy every day. I was free from the regret of what was wasted and all that time I missed in the whole last year. I was free from the guilt that I had to all the people, many of whom are here today, that dedicated time to feed me, to support me and Jennifer and Easton, to nurture me in my illness when I really couldn't take care of myself at all. I was suddenly free to live my dreams again. And most importantly, I was free to keep my promise of growing old to my wife. It's now been almost 2 years since that day, and I routinely think on how I felt during the days between being diagnosed and being declared cancer-free. I still carry the physical and mental scars of what cancer did to me and to those I love every day. However, the lessons that I learned have been so impactful that I can't help but feel thankful in some very odd way for the journey that I had during my cancer treatments. Life is unbelievably difficult for all of us. And I quickly realized in my absolute lowest point that it didn't matter how much money I had, didn't matter how successful I had been in my business. Really, none of the stressors that we worry about on a daily basis mattered. It suddenly didn't matter whatsoever. There was only one thing that mattered to me, and that thing was love. The love that I had and still had for my family, for my son, for my incredible wife. The love I have for my friends, the love I have for the community, this community, our community. And probably, most importantly, the love I have for the Lord and the strength that he gave to me and he gave to my family to overcome what seemed like impossible obstacles when they were placed in front of us.
This is but one family of 15. That meet together in our class. We ourselves, just being here with all of our guilt and shame and grace and love and forgiveness and mercy, just all of ourselves as we are, is a testimony. Yes, a testimony to the fact that, well, life is hard, but here's the thing. Here's the takeaway. God is not indifferent. When we come together and we fellowship, we can show one another the points in our stories where God's love and presence has been felt. Sometimes when you're in the middle of that Category 5 hurricane, you can't see it yourself. But we can show, yes, Josh and Jennifer's Easton story is filled with love, mercy and grace. Yes, it's also filled with mistakes and bad parts and scary times and struggles. My 7-year-old daughter was with us here yesterday in the church as we were going over what we were going to do, and she said, "Daddy, did she really throw the Christmas tree out the door?"
Yes.
Yes.
We get it down December 27th now.
It's real. It's a real story because they're real people. And hopefully, we're nurturing real faith. When we come to the church and tell our real stories and be who we are as real people, then we can build and nurture that real faith. Not some shallow for show mess, but real, deep, authentic, down in the muck of all of our realness, life-tested faith. If we do that, then we'll be making a difference in the lives of our members. You know, I didn't find my niche until I found cancer services and until I found my Sunday school class. A lot of Sundays, I just come to Sunday school and I skip big church. That's probably bad. The preacher don't want me saying that, but it is what it is. But in this, my faith has grown. Perhaps you're struggling today. Perhaps you think there's not a place for you at our table, that people may judge you, that you aren't good enough, that you're too messed up. Nonsense. Learn a lesson from Jennifer. Forgive yourself. Learn a lesson from Josh. Life's short. Focus on the important things. And a lot of that stuff you're worried about, it ain't that important. Learn a lesson from Christ. You are called to do good work just as you are. Now, don't get it twisted. We're not saying we don't try to become better people. We do. One of the great social commentators of our time, Dave Chappelle, has this funny skit where keeping it real goes wrong. We're going to keep it real, but it's not going to go wrong. Here we are, all messed up, saint and sinner, grace and sin, love and anger, guilt and forgiveness, but here, what we call church. This should be the place to work it all out. Let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, and encourage one another. Welcome home to a place that has real stories. Real people, real faith. May God bless us on the journey.